Happy St. Patrick's Day, everyone. I'm Utkarsh, the founder of Network Capital, here with Dr. Anamika, Sahitya Academy Award winner, professor, academic, and somebody that many of you might know as my mum. She's here with me in London for the next few months, so I thought I'll bring some of her knowledge to you. Today, we thought of discussing the art of reading and what that means for her and for other scholars, and tease out some of the ways in which you can parse through content and figure out how to make learning more accessible and interesting to you. So welcome, Dr. Anamika slash Mum.
Thank you so much for introducing me to your community of friends, family of friends that you've raised.
Okay. They all know you through your multiple distinguished awards, but they also know you as somebody who loves to read and think. So why should people read at all? Isn't everything available on Twitter these days or Facebook?
There is something called Nirachira Vivek, the discrimination to choose, you know, to select. The soul selects its own society. You've built a community. You know how the soul selects out of the randomness all over you. You know, you carefully pick. And this pick is so very important. There is a notion of Swayamvar in India. Actually, this is not only about the selection of friend or the selection of the important one in your life, but the selection of right kind of books and right kind of people to be in touch with. Whenever a bug bites you, whenever your soul sets on a journey, whenever there is a moral inquiry boiling within you, you feel like the peasant in one of those stories that I told you in your infancy about that peasant from Russia whom, you know, Nikolai, Tsar Nikolai had sent on a journey to a never-never land just because he couldn't pay his tax on time. So what did he say? I'd read it aloud to you, the short stories, I mean folk tales from Russian.
I remember.
Russian folk tales from different, you know, that when you were born, USSR was still one unit. So it was called Rusi Lokatai. And you must be remembering how I told you, you know, how I quoted the thing. When I read aloud, you were also amused. You started laughing. Tsar Nikolai told the peasant, Jao waha, na jane kaha. Lao use, na jane kise. You know, this kind of a journey we all are in. Like a peasant who doesn't know where to go and what to bring. There's one way of torturing somebody, but it's always, every kind of challenge is also an opportunity. So whenever you are puzzled by the questions floating around you, whenever a moral inquiry sets in you, then you feel like getting your answer. And then, you know, you look around and sometimes you don't get people to talk to. But there are books like, you know, Ambedkar was running a journal, not a journal, a paper called Mook Nayak. Mook Nayak is the dumb leader. Now, these books were like, almost like Mook Nayak around you always. They're always there. So you can talk to them. And you can find your answers, even if there is no one in the vicinity to respond to your queries. That's even good. If Rabindranath Tagore, as he says, akla chalore, if you are in the mode of akla chalore, then also books come to your rescue.
But we are all so busy. When do we find time to read books? And is there a way to skim through them? Or would you suggest reading every word, every comma, every full stop and pausing through it?
No, as I told you, you've known as a child also that the bird's eye view is very important. An overview. It's, if you're running short of time, like you have to read Shakespeare, I see no harm in, even listening, in listening to an introductory lecture from somebody and get to know the story and make friends with the characters from secondhand sources. There is no harm. But then you must come to the original. It's Hindi mein you say, "Sher ke muh mein khoon lag jana." Once the lion has tasted blood, it will definitely set on a hunt. So agar even if you get to know about something, through secondhand sources, online sources, once you are intrigued, you will go to the original. You'll hunt for the original.
And I think that's a very important lesson. There's too much to read and not so much time. So it's absolutely okay to, take a bird's eye view, read across disciplines, and when something captures one's fancy, one can dive deep. On a normal week, I have to read a ton about philosophy, about the literature on social networks, stuff about blockchain, edtech, business, mergers, acquisition, poetry. But I try and connect the dots, and I don't feel, in a way, pressured to read every single word. Of everything. In fact, indiscriminate reading is not for everyone. For some people, it might be a great idea. For others, they can choose. So do you suggest personalizing your reading, or is there a time one should read? What's the way to make reading a truly joyous experience?
Audiobooks are very handy. This is something that I also discovered very late, and you only introduced me to audiobooks. So, even when you are traveling, poetry, for instance, is a thing to be read aloud. So there are many, many, even you can help prepare poetry videos. And there are others, institutions also coming up with good selections of world poetry. Even stories are being read aloud. So while driving, while doing other things, cleaning your room, you can just listen to it. I don't say you stay there, but at least let the bug bite you. At least, if you have queries in your heart, and you get an answer somewhere, then you start following that person. So this is like, when you are in a crowd, you feel like taking a, looking around where to go, which person to relate to. And there's something called pratibhigya in Sanskrit, awakening of your deeper memory. So the person who awakens your deeper memories and answer your inner queries, that person and that book definitely becomes your favorite, and then you do not have rest is taken care of by nature. My grandmother told me once कि आधे रास्ते तो आदमी आदमी चलता है रास्ते पर, और आधा रास्ता रास्ता चलता है. आधे आधे मतलब वन यू कवर ओनली हाफ द डिस्टेंस, द रेस्ट इज कवर्ड बाय द रोड इटसेल्फ. सो इफ यू कवर्ड योर काइंड, इफ यू डन योर बिट, द नेचर नेचर टेक्स केयर ऑफ एवरीथिंग. द लास्ट बिट इज ऑलवेज सम अननोन फोर्स गाइडिंग यू. आई डोंट नो वेयर इट इज, बट इट कुड बी इन एनी हार्ट. In even if you universe keeps sending signals, you just have to get your antenna right, and the antenna would be right only when you keep trying, trying, trying. If the quest is there, you reach somewhere.
So tell me, when one reads, how does one formulate one's own opinions, ideas, thoughts? Do they directly happen when we read books, or do you need to pause, formulate your own views? What's the art of creating new ideas from stuff you read?
Look, the inquiry is yours. There are things around you, happening around you, and the philosophical inquiries, takes place in you. The bug bites you, and then you look for answer. So the thing comes from you. It should shoot from your inquiry, and then you look around for answers. Then you there are moments where things click. There is a science of reading which everybody knows. You're all, you know, experts, so you know how to read. The only good way of reading is to hold a pencil in hand, go on, you're underlining important points, making a note, you know, key point in every paragraph, and towards the end, gel it all up. You know, in our times, we also prepared summary of books. But now you don't have that kind of time to at least, you know, keywords. These keywords can definitely help while you're revising. But I'm not hinting at the science of reading. This is something that everybody knows. The art of listening is very important. You know, what others have to say, you just have to open to that. When you're reading, you just have to leave your windows open and receive what is. If the rain is pouring, you have to be receptive to the rain. You know, when you're reading, you can't suspend your thoughts, but as Coleridge says, it's a willing suspension of disbelief. So for some time at least, you have to go to that realm of not thinking. Like, you have to enter that transcendental zone of golden zero. Buddha called it golden zero, where you suspend your own thoughts and you just receive. And then the disappearance of what you've received also creates a void. And then, you know, in that void, your own ideas start, you know, flashing. It's like a lightning in the rain. When you're conscious of, you know, it's not like cherry picking. When you forget yourself, then suddenly there is a windfall and you get your cherry in your hand. What you can pick consciously are important moments. Like when you go to an examination hall, you fret so much, but what remains, you know, can be counted on your fingertips. The basic lessons of life are very little. It's in the light of your own experience that you just illustrate those philosophies.
Should you take notes while you're reading, or should you read with full attention and make notes later? How do you proceed?
I always proceed, you've seen me, with a pencil in my hand. And if it's discursive reading, there are two kinds of reading. Even when I'm reading a novel, even if I'm reading poetry, you know, I read it aloud, because the full meaning is spelt out, you know, only when you read about. That's why it was called Shruti. That's why, you know, the meaning of poetry lies in silences, pregnant silences between words, because it's the art of hinting at. You know, in poetry, the reader or the listener acts as the co-producer of meaning. And the nature of poetry is that of a woman, you know. She won't approach you directly. She'll only throw hints. And it's for you to catch the hint and build your meaning. So, but in prose, if you're reading a novel, then also you should have a pencil in your hand. If you find something very, like when the characters talk, that is the moment when you actually get to hear the inner voice, your own inner voice. When you feel so identified with the character in the novel. But then, you know, I was recently reading Gora by Tagore, and I could see that person talking, you know, becoming a permanent citizen of my imagination. So whatever is said seems to be having some resonance in my inner chambers. So that moment of identification is very good. And if you underline what he was saying, and if something very striking is said, then, you know, at that point of time, you just make a note of it. And later on, you can even, you know, mull over it later. When it's discursive reading, then it's very important to write the paragraph of every, you know, summary of every paragraph, you know, in one or two keywords. Because when you're revising, when your bird's eye view is over and you're getting into the details of it, then those keywords become like pearls and you can build a necklace out of those pearls.
What about using different contexts, different ideas, different subject matters to create new works? In your own writing, you're a student and professor of literature, but you often reference facts from science. So how does this interplay happen, and what's your advice to young people who might be interested in multiple disciplines?
You know, you just have to be like a Pied Piper. That story also you remember from your infancy. You know, if you are, there was a Pied Piper, and you know, he just went on playing the pipe, and children and everybody, even the rats followed him. So when you just, if you think you are a Pied Piper, then you go on piping, you know, your own music, and all the contexts and intertexts will start following you. You don't have to, you have to concentrate on just playing the pipe. You don't have to bother who is following you, who is not following you. But context, whatever you read, if you're open to it, if you are a good listener, when people talk, you're all ears. And when whatever you see, you watch with patience, then, you know, the nuances get down your head. You never get to forget them. Your subconscious becomes a great blotting paper. And you know, there is, everything is registered in the linguistic subconscious. You know, this you're not even aware of it. When you think about it, this is what Wordsworth called recollection in tranquility. So whenever you recollect in tranquility, then that all the things, the, you know, nuances that have gathered inside you, they start raising their little heads and talking to you. So there's not a very conscious kind of an endeavor. In reading, the subconscious plays a great role, because it's the inner chamber of language. That's why even Derrida calls it a mystical interior. He says that every language has a mystical interior. There is an aporia caught up in the mysterious interior of the text, mystical interior of the text. So your art lying is forgetting, you're doing anything consciously. You just have to enter that meditational zone where all your conscious attempts, you know, they go to docks. And only when you forget yourself, get absorbed in the text, the context and intertext from science or from whatever you've read, they come walking after you. Mary, like Mary, you remember that nursery rhyme, Mary had a little lamb? So that the little lamb of Mary, these things will walk beside you if at the time of listening or reading, even, you know, unconsciously, you know, you have made a treasure house of your heart and your memory.
Many people get to reading later in life, and they sometimes find it really challenging to parse through complex texts. What's your advice to readers who are at least thinking they are late in the game?
It's never too late to befriend a text. You know, people who do not have the right kind of exposure in their early life, they think when they are exposed to many people in a party, for instance, or any kind of a rural or urban situation, they don't know how to respond. I've seen a book somewhere. The title said, what to say after hello. Now, most people get stuck here. They do not have the confidence. They feel they cannot actually befriend a person also. So what, you know, leave alone befriending a text. But the art lies in concealing art. I had read about a heroine from Hollywood. that whenever she went to a party, and she was from a small town, so she felt so forlorn on one of these people, you know. So she'd written that whenever she felt very conscious. So in the beginning, when those big parties at Hollywood happened, she would go to the corner and sit there without bothering too much about socializing. And when people saw her sitting in the corner, they were naturally drawn to her. So this could happen to the late reader also. If he thinks he's not confident enough to march ahead and say hello, no, no, you should let him sit in the corner and observe. Not only people, but, you know, that person can join a book club. That person can read reviews. He can befriend one person who could give you, or one senior person in the university, and you know he would get you the right kind of list. And there are many ways of, you know, befriending a text even late at night, like the second time when you fall in love for the second or the third time. And you have the history of failing for so many times, you don't know what to say. But then the experience of not being able to make it for so long makes your thirst so intense that ultimately when you do it really well.
What about different forms that you can listen to books, you can read a book, you can maybe watch adaptations of books into movies? Are all of them okay? Some of them okay? How should people think about consuming content in different forms?
Look, everything is fair, not only in love and war, but also in reading. Whatever comes to you, just, you know, read it. You know, whatever is served to you, you must eat it with taste. Even if it's a second source adaptation, it's good for, you know, learners, you know, young learners or late learners or first generation learners to begin with adaptations. There's no harm in it. If you have to read a big novel and you do not have to the confidence to start it from page one, it's a good idea to watch a movie first or see a, you know, dramatic version somewhere, or read a review, or talk to somebody about it. And only when you know, like, how do you make a friend? You know, when somebody fascinates you in a crowd, you get to know about that person from so many sources, isn't it? Even if you do not have the confidence to approach that person in one go, you go to different people to collect data about that person. This is how people fall in love. In my time, we lived in a regimented society, and boys have developed some interest in a girl. This is what they do. They approached the girl through the little brother, through the little sister, through the friends. So there, this is the way you have to approach the girl. But you do it through so many sources, sometimes through the end, or your little boy who claims to be her brother. So even if you approach a book through adaptation or a review or a little brother, it's okay. But you have to approach that
text. I think, yeah, the entry point matters, and people are often able to upgrade what they read. Mm-hmm. And the starting point can be a very simple piece of text, and slowly, if one is consistent, yes, one can build one's reading muscle. So you've read all your life. What are some foundational texts that have really helped you become who you are? And are there some books that you suggest that young people must go through at some point in their lives to make more sense of it?
I started with Russian classics and Sanskrit classics. You know that. My father, your grandfather, had a rich library of Sanskrit and classics and world literature. So I started with Kalidas and Shakespeare in one go, Rilke, Lorca, all the, Tolstoy, Chekhov, these were the usual favorites. After that, Marquez also became a fan, but that was in college, that was during college. In school, you know, if you've tasted that nectar, then somehow, you know, you are not satisfied with junk food. You know, if you develop that kind of a subhigyata in early years through a parent, through a teacher, some teachers also are somehow, if you do not have somebody to guide you in your family, then teachers in schools, some teacher or the other helps you. So, you know, there's, you know, you just, that, you, it comes like a divine help. Somebody guides you to the right books. Libraries are full of good books. Even librarians can guide you. But these classics, like, you can all start with, reading your own people like Tagore and Premchand and Janendra and Agay. Even if you do not know the original mother tongue, you should read the translation, at least start with translations. Russian classics and German classics are also read in translation. So translation industry is doing so well. And good translations are like, you know, they are the good translators are the real ambassadors of the world today. So read, instead of reading things in original English, you know, you read translated texts, whatever is available in English, you must read, but not British literature. Unfortunately, this is something that I'm giving you. I'll be basically talking about literature. In literature, at least, all the ex-colonies and the conflict zones have produced wonderful literature. In today's world, the best kind of writing is coming from, you know, ex-colonies, and especially colonies like India, you know, who've had also had a long history, not only of political suffering, but also of its own literary texts. Then Germany, Poland, they are producing the best kind of literature. Even Africa, which did not have a proper written book culture, but it had a very good folk literature. So it's producing good literature.
But you're not saying that British literature is bad.
You asked me
what should be the starting point.
How to begin.
Of course, yeah.
You know, because for a beginner, it takes you to a wonderland. You know, you remember, Utkarsh, when you were growing up, in that, we had something called a BN studio at the crossing of the lane where we lived, and those were the times when people used to go to a proper studio to get their pictures clicked. Now, in olden times, people in those kinds of studios, they had something called an overexposed reel. So if a reel is overexposed, then it goes bad. Similarly, things, cultures who have been overexposed, there is something about, some kind of a fungus has gathered there. And you know, they are not a good entry point. And because we have all been exposed to British literature and even American literature for so long, there is nothing very fascinating about it now. Now we should start from, otherwise also, if you start from the margin, it's always, you know, it's more exciting. You get to know about new cultures, your journey and your adventure into new vistas. You know, they start very well on a new note.
Yeah.
And your sympathies also go in the right direction. Empathy, I must say.
And you've written, you've read extensively about British and American literature, but it doesn't necessarily need to be the starting point.
Yes,
that's a point well taken. Well, I hope everyone listening to it will consider making reading a central part of their week, their month, and their year. It will not only make you a better professional, but help you appreciate the vicissitudes of life with gusto. Thank you all very much for listening, and thank you, Dr. Anamika/Mom, for your thoughts.
Thank you.